pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
Who knew young girls
would
be such a hit?
Yeah. Do you write that one? Yeah. No, you wrote it? No.
Sorry.
Yeah. It was a good one.
I think it was written the year I was born,
though. Oh, cool.
Sorry.
We're all about honesty today, guys. Yeah. It's good to have you back, Julie.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's good to be back. I feel good. I feel energized. I feel appreciative to be here. I got a fever. It could be because I'm on the keto diet. It could be keto flu. I don't know. But I'm feeling energized, and I know that I'll be appreciative for that piece of bread I'm going to have someday. I don't know when that's going to be, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Maybe some pizza. We'll see. Yeah, tax day was this week. How many of you guys are feeling appreciative towards the IRS right now? Anybody? That's good. Carol, all right. Yeah. I don't know about y'all, but, even if it's a good year, and my CPA is like, you're good. You didn't overpay. You don't have to pay anymore. I just get tense. I just don't like that. I don't like the IRS. I don't like the bills. My wife, she's very good. Since I've known her, she always writes thank you in the memo line of her check, whether it's for bills, anything. And I was like, man, that's really cool. I'm gonna try that. I tried it. I was like gritting my teeth. I was like, thank you for the fucking. And you can't. You can fake appreciation and gratitude, but it doesn't have the same resonance, right? And I just found out I'm just grumpy, man. I'm just grumpy. And we're here today to uncover that. It's true. Even after we got married, Leah told me that her mom told her, she's like, well, I like him, but he's really moody. It's a true story. It's a true story. I'm working on it, and we're going to fix it today. We're going to fix it. Now, I don't know about that. We're going to address things and work on that. But we all know it's good to be appreciative, right? We know that. There's this great quote by Oprah Winfrey that says, if you're grateful for the things you have, you'll end up having more. But if you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. And it's so true. It's the universal law. It's what we put out into the field, we get back. And how do we do that? How do we find true gratitude and true appreciation? It's a shift. It's a small shift in mindset and understanding and consciousness. It's the idea of going from I have to do these things to I get to. It's that small shift, the mustard seed that Molly so greatly talked about, of moving your consciousness from what's the idea of being grateful in all things, but not for all things, right? We know that. It's to be grateful in all things. You see the slight difference, the nuance there? You're not grateful for someone getting sick. You're not grateful for disease. You're not grateful for someone you love passing. But you can be grateful in this experience, in this life, just to have this body, this physical form, and take in these experiences. It's that small shift. And it's never been so beautifully articulated, in my opinion, until Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. He took that old ideology, that harsh vernacular, you know, he bridged the gap. We know that. We know Jesus. He bridged the gap from the Old Testament to the New. And he took that harsh, kind of stern vernacular of, you can't do these things. Thou shalt not. The guilt aspect of the Ten Commandments, and switched it to, blessed are you if you're able to do these things. And the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes were the cornerstone of the Sermon on the Mount. It was an appeal by Jesus for righteous thought and thinking and feeling. And I'm going to read all the Beatitudes real quick. They are so relevant now more than ever in today's life versus back then. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And to be clear, we all know that when he says the kingdom of heaven is a reward, we're not talking about a geographical place. We're not talking about someplace you get to go to. Heaven is the idea of the alignment of your feelings, your thoughts, and your actions to get to this higher consciousness, to be elevated, to ascend here and now while you're in this body, on this plane. And discover the power within you. Eric Butterworth says that the Sermon on the Mount has been called the single most important exposition of Jesus' teachings. Jesus' Sermon on the Mount was the most articulate and practical outline of metaphysical truth known to man. And the object is not so much, you know, man in general, as in you in particular. The technique is not theology of symbolism, but it's molding the power of your own thought. Because Jesus was a revolutionary at heart. He wanted to set the world on fire, to change the old order and establish the kingdom of righteousness here on earth. However, his was a spiritual revolution. He had no desire to overthrow governments. His object was to change thought. And he was talking here to his disciples and followers, telling them that great numbers are not needed to change the world order. Even in so much as it takes a pinch of salt to alter the taste of a stew, so a handful of dedicated disciples can change the consciousness of the world. Look, it's the OG, the original, change your thoughts, change your life, right? That's what it is. And it goes both ways. It's the idea of we can have this small nagging thought that really is inconsequential, but we start focusing on it. We let that seed of inception grow in our environment. Our energy field becomes this thorny overgrowth of just negativity and darkness. But by the same token, like the mustard seed, we can imbue good things, little wins in our lives, and let it manifest. Let that grow, and let the light shine and overshadow any kind of doubt or darkness that we have been conditioned by. Elizabeth Sand Turner, in her amazing book, Your Hope of Glory, says, "In each statement of the Beatitudes says that we shall be blessed when we attain certain attitudes of mind." And it's all about attitude, right? It's about how we project energy. There's no attitude higher than an attitude of gratitude and appreciation. She goes on to say that the poor in spirit that he talks about are people who relinquish their human concepts so that they may learn from God. And the human intellect is marvelous indeed. But if we can attain divine wisdom, we must be humble or poor in spirit towards God and willing and eager to hear divine words and to follow them. And, you know, divine words can really be anything. Divine intervention can be something you least expect. It can be someone passing on the street telling you to watch out. It could be a lesson you learn from your kids, a lesson that takes a long time and through frustration and irritation. It could be a hardship you go through, and the lesson you learn from by going through it can be divine wisdom. But so often, our ego, our personal construct, wants this to be some earth-shattering, lightning bolt kind of beautiful, miraculous thing. And it shuts down to anything that might come our way. We don't want to hear what we might be, the message we might be receiving, because it doesn't line up with what we want. You know, the ego wants what it wants, when it wants, how it wants it. It's like Goldilocks. You know, it's too hot. It's too cold. It's not enough. And the ego has its place. It's a personal construct in place for your self-preservation. But it's a double-edged sword because it oftentimes doesn't have your best interests at hand. You know, it's infantile. It's not fully matured or realized. It reminds me of my youngest son. He's got this huge aversion to wet hands of any kind. If you come at him with moisture on your hands, he's going to freak out and like recoil and scream bloody murder. And he's gotten into this habit now of sneaking fruit, which is fine. I'm glad that he eats fruit. It's good for him. But I've got this issue where if we get fruit that has skin on it that you eat, I want to wash it and get all the germs off of it. So he hates it. If I give him a wet apple, he freaks out. He won't eat it. So I just find all these half-eaten apples around the house that he's ate with all the dirtiness from the store on it. And it's just like, you know, it's his ego. He wants what he wants when he wants it. And it might not have his best interest. I don't know. Maybe the bacteria is good for his gut, but I want to wash the dang apples. And that's my purpose, right? My purpose is to keep my son safe, keep him healthy. And our ego, it worries so much about our purpose. And if we can just stay in appreciation from moment to moment to moment to moment, we'll no doubt find ourselves on the path of righteousness, knowing that there is no lack, there's no limitation. It's like our beloved Ann Ohlfelder so beautifully demonstrated last week discussing our church finances. If we can surrender to that higher power that we all say we believe in, if we can really surrender, we can trust fully, knowing that there is enough time, health, and wealth to go around. But you have to be present. You have to be present to find that true appreciation. You got to be present. And when you're not, you're time traveling. You're either in past, future, not present. And I've struggled a lot, I've talked about this, with anxiety. And when I'm anxious, I'm depressed. It's like a two-for-one deal. It's like I'm depressed because I'm anxious, and it's this negative spiral that keeps going in, going in, going around, and I loop it. And I started really trying to be present and hear and observe my daily routine when there's nothing going on that really should be stressful or anxious. And I realized that I'm constantly rushing. I'm just always in a rush. I feel like there's no time. I get up in the morning, the kids are crazy, I'm stressing out, I got to get them to school. Taking them to school, I'm thinking about the workout I feel like I need to get done, so I'm not present with them when I drop them off. I go to the gym, trying to work out, but I'm not focused. I'm thinking about the emails I got to write, the work I got to do. I get to the emails, I'm like pissed off because I'm not doing anything creative. I'm not writing my book. And then when I get time to actually do something creative and work on my book, I'm like, oh, got to work on my talk. And it's just this never-ending hamster wheel loop. We get stuck on this hamster wheel, and we get focused on the material. And as I talked about in my last talk, we get stuck in form, and we get stuck in the Newtonian model of time and space. But our thought process here, what we believe in unity, is about the quantum field, that energetic field that is what we call God in creation. And we know that there is no time in the quantum field. It's just pure potentiality and possibility. But when we're stuck in this, we're stuck in self and stuck in lack and limitation, we become self-ish. Focused on ourselves, and we're not able to see the blessings that are before us that we can pick and tap into in the field around us, let alone be appreciative of them. It's not possible. It's a law. It's a physical, it's a universal law that we are not able to tap into. You know? We get out of the flow. But like Jesus talks about in the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, if we can just let go of the outcome and just shift our model just a little bit from I don't have to do these things. It's good if I do them, but I don't have to. I get to. And the blessing is in the getting to. And, you know, I come up here and I try to let it all hang out. You know, but seriously, I'm transparent. I don't know any other way to be. I can't be under the way. And it's my hope that through going through these, sharing these struggles, and hopefully sharing the growth that comes out of them through me, it's relatable, and maybe you can find an inkling of your life, yourself, in this, in my journey. And I'm sure many of you know, I've talked about my dad. He passed away about 10 years ago after a nasty battle with cancer. And when he passed, my brother and I took over what was left of his company. He left it to us. And working on this talk and kind of trying to be in this flow, I realized that there was no appreciation in that gift for me. Because my story, my construct was, for the past decade before that, I was in LA pursuing an acting career. And right before my dad got sick, it was a bucket list check off. I got a lead role in a feature film, and it was like, okay, here we go, I'm on my way. Did the movie, his cancer comes back after we finish the movie, after we wrap, and for the better part of the next year, I come home to help take care of him. And I say no to a lot of auditions, I miss a lot of meetings. And when he passed and I went back to LA, just, you know, the movie came out and it didn't really do anything. And it was just hard to get that mojo going again, to get that ball rolling. And I found myself being resentful. You know, here he was, this man that worked hard all his life, and when he passed away, he had the foresight to make sure the company was able to transfer to my brother and I. You know, all the bills are paid. My family's taken care of. We're healthy. Check, check, check. But I didn't find any appreciation because the story I was telling myself was like, well, I didn't get done what I needed to get done, what I wanted to get done. Need is, there's no need, what I wanted to get done. I wanted to be a successful actor, did the exact opposite of anything my dad did in hopes to be successful. And my definition of success was making a bunch of money. And so I tell myself all these stories, oh, he didn't love me because he didn't tell me anything about the farming business or the nonprofit. He just kind of gave it to us. We had to figure it out. But then I had to ask myself the truth. Did I ever really ask him about it? No. I was in my own world, going to and from LA, focused on self, focused on my goals, my achievements. Think about how upset I'd be if he didn't leave it to me, right? It's hard medicine. It's good medicine, but it's hard medicine to really look at this. Look at where our mindset is. What are we appreciative of? What are we focused on? And for me, it was like the projection of who I am. I want you to think I'm successful. And because I didn't create the business, I wasn't. Am I running the business well? Yes. Bills paid for? Yes. Are we healthy? Yes. It's just time to take a hard look. It was time for me to take a hard look to see. And I encourage you all to do the same thing. Do you truly love yourself? Or you just love what other people think about you? Do you have appreciation for yourself, your journey, what you're doing, who you really are? Not this, not this, not the external, but the divine, the internal, the energetic. Do you have an appreciation for it? Are you grateful for it? It's a constant observation and course correction that we need to do. We need to take inventory, adjust, and move forward accordingly. To shift from that harsh inner voice, the Old Testament stuff, thou shalt not be shameful because you didn't do this, too. Blessed are you because you get to, because you have this experience. And I said, the mind wants when it wants it. And we all have this idea of what God's supposed to look like or what God is supposed to be. We forget that God is in all things, and when we can't realize that, we shut down healing. We shut down possibility. It's like that Joan Osborne song. Y'all remember that? It was in the 90s. It was a big hit. It was like, what if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Trying to find his way home, but no one's calling on the phone. It reminds me of Naaman, the story of Naaman in the Bible, 2 Kings. Now, Naaman was this erudite, well-decorated Aramaean army general. He won a lot of battles, slayed his opponents. He was revered. He rubbed elbows and dined with kings. But Naaman got afflicted with leprosy. And we all know leprosy, right? It's like we've heard of it. Oh, it's a nasty skin disease. But it's really serious. Not only did it affect your skin, affect your nervous system, your ocular, your seeing, everything. It could shut your body down. And Naaman became very depressed. Here he was, this successful guy, this revered guy, but he got this serious illness. But luckily, through his connections, Naaman got put in touch with Elijah, who was this amazing prophet and healer of God in Israel. Word went to Elijah that he needed help, and Elijah said, come on down. So Naaman and his troop, his servants and his team, they go to Israel, knock on Elijah's door, waiting for this big miraculous blessing. Elijah didn't come to the door. It's his servant, someone that works for him. He's like, hey, Elijah says, go down to the Jordan River, wash yourself 7 times, and you'll be healed. Shuts the door. Naaman was incensed. He was mad, boy. He was like, doesn't he know who I am? He's not going to come to the door and show up and meet me. I'm Naaman. I've won these battles. I hang out with kings, and you're going to, he was incensed. He wanted this revelatory, grandiose, miraculous healing for his faith. He was ready to throw it all away. He turned his back like, screw this, I'm leaving. But luckily, his team talked to him. They're like, hey, man, maybe just go down to the Jordan. He's like, well, the Jordan's this dirty, muddy river that everyone gets to go to, the peasants, the plebeians. No, like, surely he means this pristine river in Syria. No, he said, go to the Jordan and wash yourself 7 times. Against his ego, against his construct and his will, he went down to the Jordan, did as instructed, and the scripture says his skin was restored to that of a healthy newborn. Huh. Right? How many times do we turn our back on something that's good for us? Because it's not what we want it. It's not how we envision things to be. And we're going to miss our healing doing that. We don't have appreciation for our answers coming to us. They're just coming to us in a way we didn't think of. Proverbs 3, 5 through 8 gives this message really succinctly. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. We have to try and have an appreciation for divine timing. Not our timing, but divine timing. And this trust is developed by submitting to the divine, to God's word, and applying its wisdom. You may not understand right now what you need to be compliant, but shift your focus from the outcome and just be stuck in the doing. It'll bring about the answers you desire, because God, the Great Spirit, never asks us to obey beyond our potential. We know this. He walks us through every step. And if we can, it produces the results that we want. You know, what's the first principle of unity? There's only one power active in the universe and in my life, God, the good, omnipotent. Do we really believe that? Do we really believe it? Do we? It's up to you. Because there are infinite possibilities in the field and infinite ways to look at things. Just how are we looking at things? Through our lens. Persian poet Hafiz has a really interesting bent on this. He said, even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. And look what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. I was working on this talk. I found this other quote. And I just, I love it. It's from The Color Purple. Alice Walker character said it. She said, I think it pisses God off if you walk by the color purple in a field somewhere and don't notice it. People think pleasing God is all God cares about. But any fool living in the world can see it always trying to please us back. Got to do these dishes. Be grateful you just ate food. Got to wipe your kid's butt for the 10th time today. Yeah? Be grateful they're healthy, I guess. Got to pay their IRS a little bit of money. Be grateful that you made some. And it's annoying, right? It's annoying, all this hyper-positivity, right? Sometimes we just sit there and wallow. We love those, you know, those emotions, boy. They are addictive. Emotions of fear, loathing, and anger. They get you jacked up. The cortisol, it's an addictive thing. Sure, if Budweiser could bottle it, they would and sell it. It doesn't mean, I'm not saying we need to bypass our feelings. I'm just saying We need to take ownership for them. Because who doesn't want to feel better? Who doesn't want to be more happy? Who doesn't want to trust more? But what I'm saying is, you're responsible for this. We're responsible for this. What you broadcast in the field is what you're going to get back, because it's never about that thing. It's always about the energy. What's going on in your Shakti? Yeah, that new car is cool. Makes you feel good. Having a couple drinks makes you feel good. It's not sustainable. You're just kicking the can down the road until you can fully be cool and be okay with what's going on in here, who you really are. And you broadcast that out into the outer. That's when things last forever. That's when things are sustainable. It's just like the shift. Find that shift from thou shalt not and you are condemned if you do this to no, I'm going to learn. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to grow. And I'm blessed because I get to do these things. Hafiz also said, follow my tracks in the sand that lead beyond time and space. For I can see deep down that you really are a golden bird that needs to dance with your spirit enraptured and ascending on the currents of light. Join me with hands, wings, hoofs, or fins in my sublime applause. Join me in the pure atmosphere of gratitude for life. I'd like to end and take these sentiments into meditation, this welcoming prayer by Father Thomas Keating. This is good medicine. I've been saying this one every day for the past week. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me today because I know it's for my healing. I welcome all thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. I let go of my desire for power and control. I let go of my desire for affection, esteem, approval, and pleasure. I let go of my desire for survival and security. I let go of my desire to change any situation, condition, person, or myself. And I open to the love and presence of God and God's actions within. Amen. I don't know how to say it any better than that, but let's just sit with ourselves for a minute. Let's sit on our chairs, their feet on the ground, and close your eyes. And just think, breathe into it, but think about the arc of your life. See how far you can remember back. When you're a little baby, toddler, maybe young child. And think of all the times that you might have felt separation. Because your faith, your understanding of life wasn't mature yet. It wasn't seasoned. And something happened, and you took it personally. You internalized it. And you clung to it. And you thought that maybe it was your fault or something you did. And I want you to think softly, but focused on that young person. On the inner child, that free child in yourself. And I want you to place your hand on your heart. And I want you to breathe love into that space. And I want you to truly know that you've never been alone. You may have felt abandoned, and you just might have abandoned yourself because you didn't know any better. But I want you to use this breath and this loving touch to be the bridge to connect you back to that space of security, that space of light, that space of inexhaustible goodness that will carry you through anything you may experience. I want you to breathe in hope and breathe out fear. And I just want you to imagine a beautiful peach or tangerine light filling your entire body up. And let it warm you. Let it comfort you. Let it remind you that you have everything you need at all times. The internal, the life you create is way more vibrant, way more powerful, and way more real than anything you might see on the outside. And as you go forth now, today, the rest of the week or the month, I want you to remember this and know that you can call this back to support yourself, to love yourself, and to be one. Breathe in one more big breath and just let it all out. May God bless you, and so it is.